Okay. Atap. Thereafter. Nirayaya. After coming out. Salilat. From the water. Pachetasaha. All the Prachetas. Udanvataha. Of the sea. Viksha. Having observed. Akupyan. Became very angry. Drumahai. By trees. Chanam. Covered. Gam. The world. Gam. The heavenly planets. Rodum. To obstruct. Iva. As if. Utritahai. Very tall. Translation, thereafter, all the Prachetas emerged from the waters of the sea. They then saw that all the trees on land had grown very tall, as if to obstruct the path to the heavenly planets. These trees had covered the entire surface of the world. At this time, the Prachetas became very angry. So you can repeat. Thereafter, all the Prachetas emerged from the waters of the sea. They then saw that all the trees on land had grown very tall, as if to obstruct the path to the heavenly planets. These trees had covered the entire surface of the world. At this time, the Prachetas became very angry. So purport by His Divine Grace, Śrīla Prabhupāda, Śrīla Prabhupāda ki jai. King Prachinavarya Shat left his kingdom before his sons arrived after the execution of penance and austerity. The sons, the Prachetas, were ordered by the Supreme Personality of Godhead to come out of the water and to go to the kingdom of their father in order to take care of that kingdom. However, when they came out, they saw that everything had been neglected due to the king's absence. They first observed that food grains were not being produced and that there were no agricultural activities. Indeed, the surface of the world was practically covered by very tall trees. It seemed as though the trees were determined to stop people from going into outer space to reach the heavenly kingdom. The Prachetas became very angry when they saw the surface of the globe covered in this way. They desired that the land be cleared for crops. It is not a fact that jungles and trees attract clouds and rain, because we find rainfall over the sea. Human beings can inhabit any place on the surface of the earth by clearing jungles and converting land for agricultural purposes. People can keep cows, and all economic problems can be solved in that way. We need only work to produce grains and take care of the cows. The wood found in the jungles may be used for constructing cottages. In this way, the economic problem of humanity can be solved. At the present moment, there are many vacant lands throughout the world, and if they are properly utilized, there will be no scarcity of food. As far as rain is concerned, it is the performance of yajna that attracts rain, as stated in the Bhagavad Gita in the third chapter, text 14. Anadbhavanti bhutani parjanyad anasambhavaha yajyad bhavati parajanyo yajyakarma samud bhavaha. All living bodies subsist on food grains which are produced from rains. Rains are produced by performance of yajna, sacrifice, and yajna is born of prescribed duties. By performing sacrifice, man will have sufficient rainfall and crops. Okay. Ataniryaya salila prachetasa udan vataha vikshakupyan rumaischanang kong gong rodham evo chitahai. So omaganat bananda shaganjana shakya chakshur and midikam yena tasmai shigurve namaha. So no one should think that the Prachetas were angry because they had been performing austerities and not eating for a long time. Sometimes we see that people, when it comes time for their meal time, if they don't get their food, they get angry because the blood sugar goes down. And then when the blood sugar goes up, jolly. So with the Prachetas, it wasn't that their blood sugar had gone down after all these years of meditating in the waters. But generally, if one is engaged in austerities that have no connection with Krishna, which the Prachetas weren't. The Prachetas were actually engaged in austerities which had connection with Krishna, because they were chanting the song sung by Lord Shiva, and they were engaged in austerities according to Lord Shiva's direction, and they were focusing their mind, and they had seen the Supreme Personality of Godhead. But in the case of the impersonalists who engage in austerities, they just become dry, bitter, and desirous of material things, beginning with charitable activities and then ending with gross sense gratification. So that's the impersonalists. The impersonalists, they have very flowery language. Just like last night I was reading some impersonalist texts. Because anyway, so what happened is that I was over someone's house and they were a follower of someone who was an impersonalist. I won't mention any names. Anyway, so I was over the house and reading about basically how you have to lose your personality or something like that. I mean, it's not that impersonalists have everything wrong. They do believe in general that you're not your body. They do believe in reincarnation. They do believe in karma. But as far as a personal aspect of the absolute truth, that's where it stops at that particular point. In fact, sometimes they even advocate, I was reading last night, they said, there's two paths by which one can reach nirvana or perfection or whatever nonsense they're thinking about. One path, they said, is the path that we follow. It's the path of, you know, jnana and whatever else. They're very much into jnana. And the other path is bhakti. And they said, it's actually like a perverted reflection of what the Bhagavad Gita says, that you know, the path of knowledge and the path of work end up in the same place that we've been reading in the Bhagavad Gita. So they say the same thing. The path of knowledge and the path of work, of bhakti, end up in the same place, but the place that they think it ends up is different. They think it ends up, you know, losing your identity. And they say you can worship the Supreme. That's okay, but it's a step. You know, it's a stepping stone. Like Prabhupada said, even the impersonalists, they step on the head of their guru when they achieve self-realization. So Krishna is like a stepping stone. You know, you step on Krishna to get to Brahman. That's their whole point. And it's, they speak so flowery, so many flowery things. Anyway, I'm not going to get into this. God knows who's watching on the internet. So don't want to freak anyone out. So, getting back to the point. So basically, when they engage in austerities, after a while, they become dry, bitter, angry, and interested in material things. So the Prachetas were not like that. They had not become dry or bitter. They had become happy. Like Prabhupada said, our process of Krishna consciousness, repeating the words of Narottama Das Thakur, he says, Kevalananda Kanda. Bhaja bhaja bhai, Chaitanya nitai. Just worship Lord Chaitanya, worship Lord Nityananda. And kevala means it's just only, just one, ananda kanda. It's a path of bliss. And Prabhupada said when he was asked about whether we have a process of recreation. It's interesting. The word recreation is two words, recreation. In other words, you become burnt out. And so you need to go to, you know, Hawaii or somewhere to recreate yourself. Just like stabilize yourself, basically. But he said our process is simply a process of recreation or recreation, depending on how you pronounce it. So devotees become more blissful. I mean, look at the Goswamis of Vrindavan, Nidra Hara Vihara. They gave up, look at their austerities, they gave up sleeping and eating. I mean, something, basically all of you just waiting for the morning program to be over so you can chow down. And it, just like I know if I come to the temple like at 2 o'clock in the afternoon, everybody's there. It's like the cows, you know. Not that everybody's a cow. But I like if you go to the, if you've ever done any farming, at a particular time, the cows know when it's time for food. I mean, we've romanticized eating process. I remember one time I was with Rita Nandamarsh. When he was a real austere person. But anyway, so we were sitting right next to the ladies' prasadam room. And he said, just be quiet, listen, not to the talking, obviously. That's not the point. Just listen to the sound of the mastication. That's a big word for all of you, mastication. He's chewing. So it's like, you know, like that. So, you know, these activities are central. Of course, being conditioned souls, you know, you have to put a little carrot in front of us to get us to perform spiritual activities. Or so the carrot is prasadam. It's spiritual, I understand. I'm not criticizing prasadam. And Lord Chaitanya said that Lord Jagannath's prasadam has the saliva from Lord Jagannath in it. It's very wonderful. But you really have to just sort of like spiritualize our eating and sleeping, and spiritualize the mating, and spiritualize the defending, and then somehow or other keeps us in Krishna consciousness. Just like I was speaking to someone last night about, he was objecting that he heard sometimes devotees say, I just want to stay in this material world and serve Krishna. And he said, I want to get out of this material world. And I said to him, there was a statement some person made that we should be like bodhisattvas. And he was saying, that's not practical, whatever. I want to get out, hell, is that all right that I want to get out? And I said, yeah, sure, it's all right you want to get out of this world. Like Prabhupada encouraged us in this way. He said, you should want to get out of this world, go back to Godhead. Of course, one who is a pure devotee of the Lord, he manma janmani janmanishvare bhavatad bhakti ahoy tiki tway. He's willing to come back and forth in the material world over and over and over again. That's a fact. But if we, in a dishonest way, you know, dishonest to ourselves, say that, I don't want to come back to this. I want to come back to the material world. This is serve Krishna, life after life. It's not really reflecting what's our desire. It just reflects, you know, we're just trying to be politically correct. Actually, we don't. Like, yes, you may say that now that you're healthy and your teeth are still in your mouth. I mean, your real teeth, not your dentures. I mean, you know, that now that, you know, you're young, like Mahamantra's young, he has his whole life in front of him, whatever. And you have energy, or like me, I'm riding on my bicycle, you know, life, merrily, 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 life is but a dream, you know, row, row, row your boat gently down the stream. So, I may be thinking like that, but, you know, am I going to say the same thing when I'm in a hospital bed with the IV tubes and the catheters? For those of you who don't know what a catheter is, that they put it in you because you can't pass properly, and the bedpans are being put under you, and you're sitting there in a room in a hospital. I mean, I just like I visited my stepfather in a room in a hospital, and there was someone next to him who was screaming all night long because he couldn't figure out how to use the button for the nurse. Come, where are you? All night. So why don't they just push the damn button? You ever seen that happen? Yeah, in the hospital. And then, you know, say the same thing when you're in the hospital and your experience. I just want to come back to this material world. Take the sins of all the devotee, of all the conditioned souls on my shoulders, and
save everybody. You know, it's easy to say that now, but, you know, we'll talk to you when you're in the hospital. We'll have a little discussion with you then, you know. Or when some other painful thing has happened to you, like your wife or husband just told you to go to hell. They didn't like you for the last 40 years. That happens. You know, the last 40 years, I've just been tolerating you. But actually, you are ugly. You know, that's more painful than being in a hospital, isn't it? So anyway, I was saying to him, yeah, you got to be practical, you know, you want to get out. I mean, obviously the bodhisattvas, they're like that, but I said, you know, I'm not a bodhisattva, I just want to be with Krishna. Of course, while I'm here, I want to do a little service. But, so the point is we have to realize our actual position. So the devotees who are advanced in devotional service, they can actually give up this eating and sleeping and still be happy. And the body can be in all these conditions. And, you know, right now we're not in that particular situation. You know, if we get too little sleep, we become grumpy. Too little food, we become grumpy, isn't it? We're no longer jolly. But the six Goswamis of Vrindavan, they were always jolly. In spite of, you know, whatever they ate or didn't eat and didn't rest or anything. So the prachetas, getting back to the point, the prachetas were jolly. They were not just like, damn it, these stupid trees, you know, who gave them permission to grow. It's like, I mean, sometimes we even do that with inanimate objects. You know, my computer does something, and I said, who gave you permission to do that? Like Krishna yesterday. Of course, it's angry at Krishna, obviously. Who gave you permission? Or something falls on the floor. I am taking care of my deities, and sometimes these little tiny things, little cows, they fall on the floor, and I get angry at the cow. The floor, angry at the person who gave me the cow. So anyway, so the prachetas, they were actually thinking as kshatriyas, because they were executing their duties, their austerities, in order to perform the service of being a kshatriya, because their father, Prachini Barishat, had left the kingdom. So a kshatriya naturally has to employ anger in order to carry out his service. He has to do things that for a brahmana wouldn't be appropriate. He has to do things that, you know, just are shocking. Sometimes, like a kshatriya has to practice hunting. I mean, it's really shocking, hunting. I remember when I was young, my father trained me how to use guns, not bow and arrow. And he also went to summer camp and we learned how to use guns. And then you have this bullseye and eventually you're supposed to go hunting with animals. I never did, fortunately, hunting or fishing or things like that. So, I mean, that's hellish. The animals are being killed. However, it's necessary for the kshatriyas to do that in order to practice their kshatriya arts. So here the prachetas are burning down, are going to burn down all the trees. That's when we get to the next verse. For the purpose of helping humanity, you know, clearing agricultural lands. And it's interesting, too, because the trees are living entities, and we're not supposed to harm any living entities. And also interesting in regard to a particular pastime that we saw with Srila Prabhupada. I was in Dallas, Texas, 1972, with Srila Prabhupada, and there was... We were walking in the courtyard of the Dallas Temple. I don't know if anyone here has been to the Dallas Temple. But in the Dallas Temple, there's an old building and a new building. And in the courtyard, between the two buildings, there's a little grassy area. Or at least there was. Actually, they turned that into a restaurant and everything. So there was a little grassy area. It's still open to the sky. And there was an oak tree. And the oak tree had been sort of like leaning on the roof of the building. And the devotees trimmed it. You know, they just trimmed the tree. And Prabhupada stopped and he pointed his finger up there and says, who has done that? You know, we were all like shocked. Who has done that? You know, we're just trying to protect the roof of the building. And I guess a little bit too much of the tree was trimmed. And then everybody got nervous. And of course, I think it was Sasrup Maharaj who was in charge. He was married at that time at the temple. He... He said, well, we have to trim it. And probably something like, you're all rascals or something like that. You don't understand protecting the trees. So there you have an instance of Prabhupada getting angry because a tree was cut, not even killed. An oak tree was cut. And here you have the Pachetas destroying all the oak, not just the oak trees, they're destroying the pine trees and all the other trees. And it's interesting because there's different scenarios. First of all, that was in the city where Prabhupada did that. And it wasn't going to help people or protect people to cut down the tree. And secondly, there's different types of trees. Like Prabhupada talked about useful trees and useless trees. Of course, every tree has some use. Like especially Prabhupada considered like pine trees to be useless trees, except they're useful for building materials. But other trees like fruit trees and other trees like that, or shade trees. I mean, the pine trees here don't get much shade. But the oak trees and the other, what we call hardwood trees, there's actually softwood, hardwood. Softwood is like pine trees. Hardwood trees like the oak trees or other trees with the broad leaf. That's how they have the broad leaf. And how do you know the difference? Because the pine trees keep their needles in the winter, whereas the oaks and the the hardwood trees, they drop their leaves in the winter. Another thing is you can see the grain of the wood. In the pine trees, the wood is actually, the grains are actually very wide. And in the hardwood trees, the grains, like in the floor here, they're very, very narrow grains. So in other words, the trees have a specific use to them. And there's some trees that are considered pious, some trees that are considered impious, which is quite interesting. So the Prachetas had to carry out their service so that people could survive on the earth planet. Another point we can understand from this particular verse and purport is what's called entropy. That when there is not a conscious management of something, things tend to fall apart. When you don't maintain something, things tend to fall apart, or things tend to get more disorganized or less useful. And that's really what happened with the trees. And that also, this principle of entropy can be utilized and applied in the proper way to prove that actually there's some conscious person behind the creation of this universe, the creation and maintenance of this universe. And creation even of the subatomic particles or the atomic particles, because they're all ordered. Without conscious energy being injected in this material energy, in the pradhana, of course, that's the unmanifest stage of the three modes of material nature, then there would be no order. I mean, everything is so orderly. I mean, one animal provides sustenance for another animal, or one plant provides sustenance for another plant, for a human being. I mean, for example, if you just had human beings and no plants, what would you do? You know, so everything has to be there simultaneously. You understand? Everything, it's like we have these symbiotic relationships with everything, with the universe, with other living entities. Symbiotic means we help each other. Of course, most of us would like to have. Now, modern world is parasitic relationship we have. And the parasitic relationship means we exploit everything else without returning. That's why we have so much problem with ecology, so many problems with pollution, scarcity of resources, because we're not returning. We're misusing, we're taking more than our quota. So our relationship is no longer symbiotic. It's parasitic, you know, like a parasite. Like if you have a parasite on your body, I'll give you an example of a parasite, like a leech. A leech is a parasite or these bacteria, you know, the flesh-eating bacteria, yuck. Or there's different parasites you can get on your body. Anyways, different viruses, different parasites like that. And they destroy your body. Whereas, you know, we have some symbiotic relationships in our body, too. We have what's called favorable flora. I don't know if you understand what that means. That doesn't mean you have flowers growing, flora. florists. That means the bacteria, you are dependent on the bacteria in your stomach to digest. If you don't have good bacteria, you know, of course, people oftentimes take different types of yogurt, acidophilus and things like that to get the good. So the bacteria in your stomach has a symbiotic relationship with you, that you're eating something, and in order to digest it properly, the bacteria have to get to work, and their work is what maintains them. So they digest it, little chew up your food, you know, your pakoras that you eat, and your raw food, and your juice, and your potato chips. So, and they chew that up, and then they digest it, and then you're able to absorb the nutrients because of that. So that's called symbiosis. You know, you all work together. And that's the way Krishna arranged nature, in a symbiotic way. But human beings, unfortunately, are becoming parasitic. They're not returning. They're not recycling. They're misusing the earth's resources. And that's another reason why, of course, Prabhupada here mentions that if there's no sacrifice, there's no rain. But another reason why there's no rain in many places of the earth is because the exploitation of the earth's resources, there's erosion. People don't properly take care. When Prabhupada here talks about agriculture, he doesn't mean just like strip and burn, like they do in Brazil. What does that mean? That means in Brazil, in many countries, South America and also in Africa, in order to have pasture for the cows that will later on become your Big Macs. Hopefully no one here eats Big Macs. Then they have to just burn like large swaths of the Amazon jungle. I mean, and they slash and burn, it's called. Slash and burn. And because of that, that's creating an imbalance in the weather. That's creating an imbalance in the, in so many things, in the oxygen in the air. There's more carbon dioxide. It's creating an imbalance in the water supply. You know, apart from the point of yajna, which is actually very important. So we should understand this. It's not that we simply do yajna and expect everything to come out all right. We have to use some intelligence in dealing with the material energy. Sometimes devotees think like that. I'll give you an example. That if I simply offer food to Krishna, it doesn't matter what it is, I can eat it and I'll be healthy. You know, there's also the material energy that functions in a particular way. I mean, there's subtle laws of nature as well as gross laws of nature. You know, if you chant Hare Krishna, you're not Prahlad Maharaj. If someone throws you off a cliff, you're a pancake. You become a pancake. It's like I saw this nice video, the Vishnu Purana. And the Prahlad Maharaj was thrown off a cliff and Lord Vishnu came and he caught him like that. So, you know, it's like a nice father, he called his son, and lowered him to the ground. So sometimes we tend to think that because we're Krishna conscious, the material energy is going to act in a different way than it acts for other people. You know, just eat something that's unhealthy and then, you know, just offer it to Krishna first. And then you'll be healthy. It doesn't work like that. I mean, the material energy, there's specific things that happen in the material. Don't put oil in your car. It doesn't matter. If the car is utilized in Krishna's service, the car doesn't need oil, right? I mean, that's a philosophy. I've heard that before. You don't have to sleep at night, because if you're engaged in Krishna's service, you know, naturally, Krishna will give you energy in you. But you discover something else happens. So there has to be some intelligence, too. So talking about here, agriculture, it's not simply just sacrifice. Agriculture has to be done in a specific way so there's no erosion, so that you're conserving resources, so that you organize things, you know, you plow the land or don't plow or whatever system you're using in a certain way, so it's scientifically sound. This is a very important point. So don't take Prabhupada's words out of context and think you just simply have to chant and do yajna, because that's nama yajna. and then everything will be all right. It's not like that. You got to think about how you're going to support your family. You're not like Srivast Thakur, who says, I have this 1-2-3 technique. If I have to fast for 3 days, I'm going to drown myself in the Ganges. And Lord Chaitanya says, I'll make sure you have enough to eat. It's not like that. You can chant all day long, but you may starve to death too. Or you may not have the money to pay your mortgage. Or you may not, I mean, there's so many things, or you may get sick. So we have to be very practical in this world. Prabhupada was like that. He was a very practical person. I mean, he exercised every day. He took his medicine. He took his massage. I guess so many things he was practical in, and not just chanting Hare Krishna. He had a very extremely practical mind. One of the qualities of a pure devotee is that a pure devotee is expert. It's called daksha. Not the daksha that we know from the Bhagavatam, but a pure devotee is daksha, or expert in all the things. So this is a very important point. So any questions or comments about any of the points I just made in class? I told you about the Prachetas. Anger was not inappropriate. And also I talked about being intelligent and the application of practical Krishna consciousness. Yeah. Yeah.
Then the trees had overrun,
there
was no agriculture. So it seems that in our society today, because there's a lack of proper leadership, like last night you were showing, you know, that film that was made about the children. Children of Vrindavan.
Mm.
And when you see, like, people living in such conditions, and can only think that, you know, it's like a lack of proper leadership, a lack of proper resources.
Yeah, like Prabhupada said here, it's very interesting, the purport in that regard. There are many vacant lands throughout the world. So in other words, there's plenty of resources. Of course, there are many reasons they're being misallocated. I mean, one reason is economically people are hoarding to make a profit. Mm. Another reason is, of course, the meat-centered diet that America and a lot of the so-called first world are following. And I was giving the statistic last night that 60% of the people who are eat too much are in America, and America only represents like 13% of the world's population. So there's a misallocation of the world's resources. And of course, the meat-centered diet uses so much resources, it's like 1/17 as efficient as a vegetarian diet. But there's this propaganda that when you become rich, then you're not supposed to eat vegetables. Vegetables are just like for poor people. That's a poor person's diet. So you find people all over the world, as the people get wealthier in India, and of course China and other places, people start to eat meat, more and more meat. Japan is like that too. Originally in Japan, there was not much meat eaten. There was fish, of course. But meat was considered, even we were talking last night, 100 years ago, meat was considered a delicacy. That's not nice, but anyway. So people wouldn't eat it every day of the week. They generally had vegetables, so they were healthier at that time. So the meat misuses, or the production of meat misuses an inappropriate portion of the earth's resources. It's 1/17 as effective as growing vegetables and feeding people with vegetables. In other words, you could feed 17 times the amount of people. Just like, that's one reason why we talk about the earth's resources being misallocated. Another reason Prabhupada talks about is this whole thing about immigration. Prabhupada said that if people are starving in one place, then we won't let people move or come and grow the land. Like in America, if we didn't bring people in from other countries to harvest the vegetables or harvest the fruits, the fruits and vegetables would just die on the vine and we wouldn't have any for ourselves. So people come anyway, but the point is this whole thing with immigration, keeping people like confined to one country or not allowed to enter into another country, because this whole concept of nationalism is very petty. Because we're all human beings, we're all members of God's family, we're not even just human beings. We should be concerned with all living entities. So really to erect a boundary or a wall around a particular country with UAVs, unmanned aerial vehicles, you know, just like patrolling, what they call drones. A drone, actually a drone means someone who's stupid. Anyway, so it's patrolling the borders. I mean, it's crazy. I mean, obviously you have to protect yourself if someone's coming to attack. But if someone's coming to do grow vegetables or something like that. So there's many different reasons why people are starving in the world today. You know, meat-centered diet, this immigration thing, and hoarding, exploitation of other people. Prabhupada specifically talked about hoarding also. He said in India that, like, sometimes the people will just hoard the grains and hoard the food and wait for the time of scarcity when they can sell it at a high price. And Prabhupada said, Indira Gandhi, he said, specifically should kill the hoarders and distribute the grains when she was in charge of the government. That was many, many years ago. Okay.